Recession is certainly not a new experience. Over the course of our lives, we've experienced other slowdowns in the economy. But in the past, the events which comprised historical shifts happened over decades, if not centuries. The decline we see today in the world's economic stability has happened so rapidly that we are witnesses to it worsening on a daily basis. What are the implications for the future? We'll find out today as Dr. David Jeremiah continues his series, The Coming Economic Armageddon. Now here's David to introduce today's message.
And thank you for joining us today. Today we continue what we started yesterday as we discuss the fall of the American economy. I must tell you, friends, that when I began to study this about a year ago and really got my arms around what was going on here in our economy, it was a real challenging moment for me. I just kept thinking, can it be like this? Is this really true? Is this where we are? And then I was aware of the fact that the average person has no clue as to the seriousness of this situation and where it could take us. So we'll continue to analyze that and understand it. And as you know, we'll get to the scriptures before this is over. You just got to stay with me as we work through all this research. I want to remind you that we're within 2 weeks now of our first rally for the fall. We're going to be in Greensboro, North Carolina on Thursday, October the 14th. That'll be preceded that very day by a pastor's breakfast. And we're going to have our rally at 7 p.m. It will be an incredible night with Charles Billingsley and Ian Oakley and all of our Turning Point team. If you've never been to a Turning Point event, you really need to come, and you can get tickets. They're absolutely free, but you must order them from Turning Point by going to our website or by calling our order line. These tickets are free, but you have to have a ticket to come to the event. It's the only way we can control the flow of traffic and the people that come to the event so that we have enough room for everybody. So be sure to get your tickets today by going to David Jeremiah. .org/rallies and do it today while you're thinking about it. Now let's get started again with the continuation of our discussion of the fall of the American economy.
So far, we've been addressing only the debt itself. Let's just talk about interest for a moment. If you have a mortgage on your home, as we do, you have probably experienced a reaction similar to mine when I get that statement every year and realize how much I pay on interest and how little of it goes to principal. If you got a new home and you mortgage your home, you financed your home, for the first few years, you seemed like all you're doing is paying interest, and you don't ever reduce the debt very much. Well, if you think that's discouraging, consider the U.S. government's fiscal year-end interest statement. According to the White House Office of Management and Budget, $904 billion came into the Treasury through tax payments at the end of 2009. The interest on our national debt was $383 billion, not the principal, just the interest. This means that the cost of interest on the debt represented more than 40 cents of every dollar that came in from individual income tax, and that does not even touch the principal. Another disconcerting problem with our enormous debt burden is the parties to whom we owe it. In 1952, we owed almost all of our national debt to ourselves, to individual investors and American financial institutions. In fact, in 1952, less than 5% of U.S. Treasury bonds were in foreign hands. According to the Department of the Treasury, at the end of the 2009 financial year, 50% of our nation's public debt is owned by foreign governments and financial institutions. Let me just put a pause there for a moment. One of the reasons for that is Americans don't save any money, so they don't have anything to invest. Anybody here remember the war bonds that we had a long time ago? And it used to be a big deal. Buy a government bond and save money, but also help your government. You don't do that anymore because nobody's got any money. We don't save any money. Less than 1% is what we save. Now, I wasn't really all that worried about this until I began to realize who we owe this money to. Here's who we owe the money to. And these are in billions of dollars. We owe $798.9 billion to China. We owe $746 billion to Japan, $230 billion to the United Kingdom, $188 billion to oil exporting countries, $169 billion to the Caribbean banking centers, $156 billion to Brazil, $142 billion to Hong Kong, and for the first time, we now owe $122.5 billion to Russia. We did not owe Russia anything in 2007, Now she is the eighth largest foreign holder of our debt. This money has been borrowed by using IOUs, which we call bonds or treasury notes. We use that borrowed money to pay our government's current bills. Until our debt is repaid, which it likely never will be, we pay interest on those IOUs. According to the Congressional Budget Office forecast for this decade, the government expects to incur $9 trillion in new debt. More than half of that amount will be applied to interest payments, $4.8 trillion. One financial professional has determined that the interest on the national debt accrues at the rate of $41 million an hour. That's $690,000 a minute or $11,500 per second. Remember, that's just the interest. These payments do not touch the principal or reduce our indebtedness. Here's another thing that I found out that just is mind-boggling to me. If there is a 1% increase in the interest rate on our debt, an increase of 1 percentage point will cost an extra $80 billion. Just 1%. We have so much debt that if 1% is, if it goes from, let's say, 5% to 6%, the difference in what we will have to pay is $80 billion, which is equal to the combined budgets of the Department of Energy and the Department of Education. That's just 1% of interest increase on the debt that we owe as a nation. Now, when you move past the nation's debt, you move to the private debt of citizens. And I know that's getting a little closer to home, so I won't spend too much time here. But household debt rose from $7.8 trillion in 2002 to $14 trillion in 2008 in just 6 years. That debt cannot possibly be paid off in one generation, so it's passed on, in some cases, to people who have not even been born yet. Here we are, supposedly the wealthiest nation in the world, and we are over our heads in debt. Shouldn't a nation with our wealth be known for lending instead of borrowing? I mean, that seems to have been God's perspective when he talked to the people of Israel. He said this to Israel, "For the Lord your God will bless you just as he promised you. You shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. You shall reign over many nations, but they shall not reign over you." How many of you know that what Solomon said is true? The borrower serves the lender. And one of the things that ought to be frightening to all of us as Americans is the realization that the longer we go without resolving these issues, the longer we go continuing to build our indebtedness, the more we put ourselves under the control of the nations to whom we owe this money. Already, China is doing some interesting things based upon the fact they know they've got us in a corner we can't get out of because we owe them so much money. Well, that brings us to another subject, which, again, needs to be explained, at least if you're where I was when I started this investigation, and that's the subject of inflation. Since 1934, people have been playing Monopoly, the world's best-selling board game. It's now played in 103 countries and in 37 languages. How many ever played Monopoly here? Anybody? Well, unfortunately, we now have world governments, including our own, that are playing Monopoly. And I want to show you what I mean. Here is a section out of the rules of every Monopoly game. Here's what it says. The bank collects all taxes, fines, loans, and interest, and the price of all properties which it sells and auctions. The bank never goes broke. If the bank runs out of money, the banker may issue as much more as may be needed by writing on any ordinary paper. Is that not what we do? These are exactly the rules that our government plays by in exchanging the U.S. monetary supply. In his 2009 book called A New Economic Disorder, economist Larry Bates wrote these words. He said, "Today in America, we are living in a fool's paradise. We seem to believe we found the secret that eluded the ancient alchemists. We believe we can slap ink on paper and somehow it will turn to gold. The money manipulators have successfully created the illusion of prosperity through the most massive creation of debt and paper money that has ever occurred in the history of the world. That debt bubble is about to burst again, and when it does, all those investments, maybe even you think are safe, CDs and bonds and mutual funds, will be in deep, deep trouble. That's just the tip of the iceberg that is about to ram us because of inflation." as the dollar continues to lose its status, the U.S. is going to have to bring IOUs with increasingly higher interest rates to attract lenders. In other words, China's going to come and say, well, you guys are in such terrible shape. We'll loan you the money, but it's going to cost you more to borrow this money. And those higher rates will cause consumer interest rates to go up in proportion. And this means that the cost of borrowing for homes and cars will get more expensive, partly as a result of the high rates themselves and partly because rising interest rates will trigger inflation as the economy needs more dollars to meet the rising cost of borrowing. Most economists foresee a period of massive inflation ahead as the economy begins absorbing the billions of dollars of stimulus money the federal government has printed. If you insert more printed dollars into the economy, listen carefully, the value of your existing dollars is decreased, meaning the price of everything goes up. Inflation isn't rising prices as much as we like to believe it is. Despite what politicians and money manipulators would like you to believe, inflation is not rising prices. That's only a symptom of inflation, just as sniffles are the symptoms of a cold. Knowledgeable people are well aware that inflation is an increase in the supply of money, period. Nothing more, nothing less. The more money the Federal Reserve prints and pumps into our economy, the higher prices are driven up. Hyperinflation robs money of its value. Here's an illustration from history. During the inflationary period of the 1920s in post-war Germany, the government printed so many marks that they were being used to light cigarettes and fires. Erwin Lutzer, one of my friends, tells a story in one of his books on Germany. Perhaps it's fictitious, I don't know, but it's the story of a woman who filled her wheelbarrow with German marks and left them outside a grocery store she went to shop, confident that no one would steal the worthless currency. She returned to find a pile of marks laid out on the ground and someone had stolen her wheelbarrow. It had far more value than all the money that was in the wheelbarrow itself. Now, we can learn much about the impact of inflation from history. Economist Constantino Brisciani-Tarroni, writing of the summer of 1923 when Germany's financial crisis was heating up, said this: the state's need of money increased rapidly. Private banks, besieged by their clients, found it impossible to meet the demand for money. So in an attempt to stabilize the German economy, economists were urging the government to print less money. But their cries were in vain because of many who were saying, print more. Officials were roughly in the same position that Ben Bernanke and Barack Obama are today. They feared the economy might fall into trouble. And so, unless they made more cash and credit available, there wasn't anything left to do. So they printed more money, just as we have done and we are doing. Inflation also played a major role in the fall of the Roman Empire. If you go back and read the history of the Roman Empire and how it fell, Rome wasn't built in a day, nor was its money destroyed overnight. Back in AD 64, in Nero's reign, the aureus was reduced by 10% of its weight. Thereafter, now watch this, whenever Rome needed more money to finance their wars, their public improvements, their social welfare services, and their circuses, their trade deficits, they reduced the metal content in their coins, called clipping coins. That's the term that was used for it, clipping coins. By the time Odoacer deposed the last emperor of Rome in 476, the silver denarius of Rome contained 0.02% of silver. When it had started out, it was all silver. 0.02% of silver. That's how they printed money back in those days. They didn't have paper money like we have, so they just reduced the metal content in their coins. From then until now, every central banker in the world has taken the devil's bait, creating money out of thin air as if no one were looking, as if it had not been tried before, as if they could get away with it and people really could get something for nothing. Deficits and debt and inflation all add up to economic chaos because short-sighted leaders tend to address the problem by creating more deficits and debts and inflation. And as a result, for the first time in my lifetime, the word trillion is being tossed around like a common denominator. I really didn't even know how much a trillion was. I mean, a trillion? Here's the illustration to help us grasp how much a trillion is. By the way, a trillion is a million, million, a thousand, billion. It's one followed by 12 zeros. Let me say that again. A trillion is a million, million, a thousand, billion. It's one followed by 12 zeros. Now remember, we're talking about lots of trillions now in our economy. The Federal Reserve issues new $100 bills to your bank in banded packages of 100 bills each. Each package equals $10,000. Now, 100 such stacks equals $1 million. A measly $1 million doesn't look very impressive. I mean, you could easily stuff it into a shopping bag. How'd you like to have a shopping bag like that, huh? 100 million looks a little more respectable. It stacks into a neat cube shape that fills a standard industrial pallet. $1 billion fills 10 pallets of $100 bills. $1 trillion would fill 10,000 pallets of $100 bills, enough to fill the floor of a fair-sized warehouse. That's how much a trillion is. Or if you're still having trouble getting your mind around that amount, here's an analogy from World Magazine that might help. To get an idea of how massive this amount is, think of it in seconds. Going back in time, 1 million seconds would take you back 12 days. 1 billion seconds would take you back 30 years, and 1 trillion seconds would take you back 32,000 years. That's how much a trillion is. Can you handle one more? California representative and member of the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, Daryl Issa, pictured it this way. If you spent $1 million a day, if you spent $1 million a day going back to the birth of Jesus Christ, that wouldn't even come close to just $1 trillion. The fact that our government and economists and media are beginning to think in terms of trillion instead of billion is not a good sign. It tells us that the economy is being filled with monopoly money, and the government's giant Ponzi scheme is ballooning ever more rapidly in order to keep from collapsing. What will happen when the government's giant Ponzi scheme catches up with itself? Well, according to a 2009 article in the Wall Street Journal, if the government were ever to default on its promise to pay periodic interest payments or to repay the debt at maturity, the United States economy would plunge into a level of chaos that would make the layman bankrupt look like a non-event. I agree with those who say it's not very likely that our nation will ever be able to pay off her debts. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, any new health benefit programs require more funding than our tax structure can support. Even if the tax rates are increased, as we have been assured will happen, there just isn't enough money to buy our way out of debt. If the United States were to go bankrupt, it would morally default on everything it owes by just saying we no longer acknowledge our debts. The government would simply reset the value of our currency by declaring the worth of a dollar with no real value to back it up. Taxes could go as high as 70% of one's income. If history repeats itself, revolution would follow shortly afterwards. Now, while we may not live to see our nation in bankruptcy, most economists believe that the government's monetary policies have taken us beyond the possibility of our economy ever being as stable as it once was. I remember when I was studying all of this, a copy of the USA Today was in the airplane when I was traveling, and I picked it up, and there was an article in there, and the title of the article was, "There is no normal anymore." That was the title of the article. And here's some of what it said. The statement, "There is no normal anymore," goes a long way toward explaining why so many Americans are angry, confused, and worried today. Polls show that 58% of Americans think the country is on the wrong track, suffering an economy that's sick, and they want things to get back to normal. But increasingly, they feel like there is no normal anymore. Only Americans who lived through the Great Depression of the 1930s can remember a time of greater stress. In the midst of so-called recovery, the economy is still shedding tens of thousands of jobs monthly, with the national unemployment rate already at 10%. In the past, 4 to 6% was considered normal, but that now seems like a distant dream because we just can't keep up. There's nothing normal about an economy in which the federal government takes over giant automakers, bails out too-big-to-fail banks, buys up nearly all mortgages, keeps short-term interest rates at zero, and prints over $1 trillion new dollars. As the national debt passes $12 trillion and the White House projects $9 trillion more in deficits over the next 10 years, the value of the dollar sinks and the price of gold, America's best fear gauge, rises past $1,100 an ounce. We long for a return to normalcy, but it seems impossible to get there from where we are. The future is beginning to be clear. Barring some dramatic reversal, our nation is facing the most serious financial issues it has ever faced in its history. I want to pause here for just a moment before we look at the scripture for a few moments at the end. People ask me all the time, what do you think about what's going on? I don't want to get political in this pulpit. I'm not here to divide our audience. I know we have Democrats that come to church here. We have Republicans. There's enough blame to go around, isn't there, for all of us? I mean, the Republicans sure didn't make anything great happen when they were in. The Democrats are... they're at least trying to do something, even though we may think it's the wrong thing. But here's what I'd like you to know, and here's what I'd like you to think about. Do you think if everybody who's involved in making the decisions we're making right now would hear what I've said about where we are as a nation in relation to our indebtedness, that we would have the courage to actually add more to the indebtedness? Don and I were talking about this, and I said, how would you like to be a leader of Japan to whom we owe $780 billion and look across the ocean by way of television and notice that these people who owe you so much money, they're having a hard time paying it, are now voting to themselves more entitlement programs that will take more and more of the money? Wouldn't it be right for us to think about paying off our debts before we start voting more money to ourselves? I mean, that's just the plan, right? It seems to me like that makes more sense. Well, you know, this isn't a surprise to us if we read the Bible. Let me just share with you what I want to tell you about the future and about the Bible. And I've said a lot because I couldn't tell the story. There's no short way to tell the story I've just told you. And I don't want you to be depressed, so hang on. We'll get this back up here before we're finished.
And you're going to have to hang on till tomorrow for me to do that. And I hope you won't forget to be with us tomorrow as we draw all of this together and conclude our discussion of the fall of the American economy. Well, we are so excited about this series, as I mentioned earlier, that we are making this book. This is the longest book I've ever written. More research in here. I think there are over 300 footnotes in this book. And we have really done our very best to present the case for the prophetic view of the future from the financial perspective and from the biblical perspective. It begins with this foundation, the falling foundation of the American economy. And there are 10 chapters in this book. We would love to send this brand new hardback book to you as our way of saying thank you for your gift to us during the month of October. We encourage you to get this book and share it with others. Get one you can give to someone who is in a place of influence. There's time for us to make a difference, but we can't make a difference if we don't know where we are. And that's what this book is all about. So send your gift to Turning Point today. And when you do so, ask for your copy of The Coming Economic Armageddon. We'll get it into the mail just as soon as we can, and we encourage you to make your gift as generous as possible to help us as we try to make a difference in this particular time that God has called us to as a ministry. Now, don't forget also the rallies are coming up. Let me just speak to that for a moment. In Greensboro on Thursday, October the 14th, we are going to be at the Greensboro Coliseum at 7 p.m. There's a pastor's breakfast that morning at 8 a.m. We encourage you guys, you pastors, to go online and get registered. It's free. We will be giving every pastor a copy of this new book at that breakfast. We'll have a great time of worship, and we'll be giving away a lot of other things at that breakfast for pastors from our Turning Point resources. And we just encourage you guys to come. It's a great time of fellowship. I promise you, you will leave encouraged, and you can get all the information you need for the pastor's breakfast, and be sure to order your tickets for the rally by going to davidjeremiah.org/rallies. We'll see you right here tomorrow. Thank you for listening.
If you'd like more information about Dr. Jeremiah's new series, The Coming Economic Armageddon, visit our website at davidjeremiah.org/radio. When you do, look for two great ways to stay connected to Turning Point. Sign up for your free copy of our monthly magazine, Turning Points, or Daily Turning Point, our daily e-devotional. Sign up today by visiting davidjeremiah.org/radio or call us at 800-947-1993. That's 800-947-1993. When you call or visit online, request this month's resource, The Coming Economic Armageddon. This new book by Dr. David Jeremiah addresses aspects of the economic changes in our world and reminds us to keep our trust in God alone, our only true source of safety and security. Order this book for a gift of any amount. Just call or click today. This is Mark Larson. Join us tomorrow as we continue the series, The Coming Economic Armageddon, on Turning Point with Dr. David Jeremiah.